Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode, and today I am joined by, and it's taken, we have taken a little while for it to bring this together, Gemma Edelman. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, you're right. It's taken us quite a while to make this happen. So I'm very excited to be here today and for us to finally have this official chat, because we've had a couple off air. It'd be nice to do it this way.
So would you like to properly introduce yourself and just tell everybody what you do?
Okay. So I am Gemma Lee Edelman. I'm a social coach, which is a type of coaching that is based on positive psychology, and it kind of offers a more holistic approach to this type of therapy, if we want to call it this, we want to use that word. And I walk alongside people that are trying to rebuild their lives and create the lives and businesses as well that, you know, they truly deserve and that they want, not that they've necessarily been doing, and, you know, being people pleasers at other points in their lives.
Yeah, which is obviously part of what we're going to be talking about, isn't it? You know, and when it comes to domestic abuse, this is a huge, huge problem. Victims having self-worth
issues.
And thinking that they're not worth anything more, and that can stem way back into their childhood. Maybe that's all they've ever known. Mm-hmm. And they don't believe that they deserve better.
And I think it's such a shame, because it's such a common thing that we see nowadays. Obviously with victims, it's, you know, it's a key element of why sometimes, you know, they've then lived through this type of experience. But this idea of lack of self-worth, I mean, we see it so often in children as well. This is a problem, like, nowadays it's starting so much earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it can even be, you know, that they don't, you know, that they don't think they're capable of maintaining a level of lifestyle for their children that they've maybe been used to. And that can keep them stuck. You know, I'm not good enough to give them the life that they deserve. So I'm going to have to just stay and put up with this.
Absolutely. And I think often as well, we've been encouraged so much by society, by, you know, kind of expectations, values, societal norms, to almost always put the focus and the spotlight outside and not inside. Yeah. You know, other people are more important, like the example that you've just given, staying so that, you know, the kids or their children can then have the type of life that they want to. Yeah. And forgetting how important it is to shine that light on themselves as well, so that they can, in so many different ways, give their kids a different experience of what it means to form part of a family.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the important thing really is for parents, any parents, particularly mums, that are feeling like that, it's to look at the bigger picture, because if you've learned through observation through your life, and it's really important to identify and really sit down and identify this generational cycle that keeps happening on repeat, because I assure you there will be a generational cycle that's happening on repeat here. Mm-hmm. You will be the way you are because of what you've observed in somebody else. So we need to break that cycle, as hard as it is for our children. Because otherwise they're going to end up in the exact same situation. You know, they could end up agreeing to things because they're afraid of losing friendships in school or in life in general. They may end up being completely taken advantage of in the workplace. You know, there's all sorts of scenarios where this people pleasing becomes a problem. It's not just in an abusive relationship.
Exactly, that's the thing. It can show up in so many different areas of our lives. And as a child of a woman that was strong enough to leave, you know, one of the things that for me, when I look back on that, is that she's such an amazing role model. That yes, it was hard, and yes, it was scary. And thankfully, I can only imagine, you know, the difficulty that she faced making that decision. But we forget sometimes, I'm a mum now, and you know, we forget that actually we are our children's biggest role models. They are who, you know, we are who they look to. And the things that sometimes we think are important, like, you know, the financial security so that we can then give them all the opportunities, in inverted commas, you know, we quite often prioritize that above other things, like, you know, showing up as a person that has, you know, strong enough values to say, no, I am worth more than this. I want something different. And even though this is going to be really difficult, I'm going to take that step forward because it, you know, I trust that I deserve something better.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I had a situation just, in fact, when I get off this interview with you, I have to do a safeguarding referral for a little girl that I had my suspicions that something was going on anyway. But it was another friend of my daughter's who basically told me about some very concerning things about another little girl there, another little girl that plays with them, his father, who has been in prison for child sex offences.
So complicated.
And he's always heavily intoxicated with drugs and alcohol, and left alone to look after the child. And I said straight away, I said, look, combined with what I'd spotted and myself and recognized the concerns, because I said, you already knew that I had concerns. I am going to have to do a safeguard and referral now. I said, because that little girl is not safe. And not only that, you know, I know that this little girl's been asking my daughter all the time to come over for tea and have sleepovers and everything else. And the reality is, no children should be going over to that house at all, at all. Anyway, he was trying to control the narrative. He wanted me to do it the way he was telling me to do it. And I'm like, mm-mm-mm, no.
That's not how this
You know,
works.
number one, I'm trained in this. And number two, even I haven't just jumped straight away and reacted as, you know, based off my own professional observations and concerns, as well as personal concerns. I've also reached out and spoken to two people who work in directly in ch child safeguarding. And I've got their view person that their you know off the record views before I do anything. I say it was bank holiday anyway. There's going to be skeleton staff. There's not an awful lot I can do anyway. I want to make sure I speak to the right people, and that's why I'm going to wait until after the bank holiday.
Can I ask you a question? What's the protocol with the safeguarding? Like, what are the different steps that you would, because obviously I'm here in Spain, and in different countries it works differently. And I've been involved in some cases like this because I've done quite a lot of family coaching. So I'd just be interested to see how it actually works in the UK.
It would just be literally ringing Child Protection Department, the local authority for that area, and raising your concerns, which you can do anonymously. So anybody can make these concerns, raise these concerns anonymously. You know, you don't have to disclose your details.
Yeah.
And even if you disclose your details to them, you can say, these are the reasons why I don't want that the
The
other
other
person
person
to
and
know,
that.
because it can increase their risk. But also, the thing is, it is, I do have mixed feelings on this and that. For me to make this judgment, because I know how involvement with from social services, when it's not justified, can cause much more
More
harm
trouble.
than good.
Yeah. Yeah, that was actually my question, because it can be such a delicate line between making that call and obviously it being the absolute right call and protecting the interests of the children. But children of different ages don't always communicate things in a way, you know, that would they communicate it using their language, which can sometimes by an adult be, you know, interpreted differently. And like you said, you know, if the call's made and there's not those or those issues aren't actually happening, it can cause more problems in the long run.
It is difficult. It's really, really challenging to know when's the right when you need to
Yeah.
react and when you need to. You're probably better off staying, leaving things alone, because you're going to add more fuel to the fire and make things worse for that child. But when it comes to things like child sexual offences, you can't afford to
Can't run the
take chances.
risks.
And when there's blatant, drugs being taken, there's blatant neglect. These are all the things that is like, you absolutely have to.
They're the red flags, the red flags
Absolutely.
that you
Yeah, I
would
mean,
need
there's
to
too many
know.
red flags here. This is what I mean with this case, way too many red flags. So, I basically, because I told him absolutely not, I am not, my question to you're telling me you want to go and ask, get more information from another neighbour. Well, you were very confident that about these concerns when you raised this to me. My question is, why haven't you done that before? And, that would be the normal thing to do, wouldn't it? He didn't like my response. And I got called a arrogant C-U-N-T. Yes. And he didn't see what he'd done wrong, that I was the problem. I was the problem.
Again, that's,
So,
you know, such it can be
yeah.
such a common reaction, can't it, with
Yeah.
people that are perpetrating this type of
Yes.
thing, not actually being able to see where they're going wrong or
Yeah.
seeing, you
Yeah.
know, the problems in their behavior.
Yeah. So I obviously said to my daughter, I said, look, I'm really sorry. I know, like, you and his daughter, you are really good friends, but unfortunately, I cannot supervise play dates with him anymore. But that's not fair, is it? And so does that mean she can come and have a play date with, with me? I said, I don't think her dad will allow that without him there. So I said, unfortunately, I cannot and I will not, darling. I said, because I have to hold my own boundaries very strong, and you don't allow anybody to speak to you like that. And I said, I've tried to obviously maintain this, even though, I had some concerns for your friendship, but that's a line I can't overlook. I
And
can't.
that's so interesting because, you know, what we were talking about just before, you know, we pressed record is this idea of our own personal values and being clear on what things we are okay with and what things we absolutely aren't. And whilst it can sometimes be difficult to, you know, make that call, especially in this case, when it's going to directly affect your daughter, her, you know, her circle of friends, her social life, even though, you know, she's still young, but it's an important part of her life and you know, the way that she's kind of going through her every day. But that this idea of having a really, really clear idea of what our personal values are, how that then automatically helps us build in self-confidence, build in self-esteem, you know, make decisions that we feel comfortable with because it's actually in alignment with who we truly are.
And this is why, we, no matter how uncomfortable and how challenging it feels for you to walk away from a situation, and how you, even how you think you are perceiving it is impacting your children as well, you have to really, really think about what message you are sending. What are you teaching your children in regards to how people should treat them
Yeah.
in life moving forward?
Quite often, if I'm in session with a parent, because when I do family coaching, I work with the child, but obviously it's about a systems change. It's about working with the whole dynamic so that everybody can find their way through whatever issue it is that they're dealing with at the time. And a question that I quite often ask, to the parents is, if with regards to their own behavior or something that maybe they're allowing to happen that they don't feel comfortable with, is how would you feel if it were your daughter or your son that were in this situation? And the look on their faces, it's a question that we don't often allow ourselves to even ask ourselves, because that is really holding the mirror up. That's really forcing us to say, okay, am I okay with this? Or am I not okay? How do you want your kids to feel? How do you want your kids to feel? What do you want the emotions to be that accompany them in life? Do you want them to be happy? Do you want them to be confident? Do you want them to be positive, outgoing? Or do you want them to be scared, vulnerable? And I
Taking
think
advantage of,
exactly, if we link it to the emotions, then not, it doesn't become easier. Of course, it doesn't become easier, but I think that that question can have so like a much bigger impact, because then we're not thinking about the day to day. Okay, well, I want them to be able to do all of the hobbies that they want to, or I want them, or this idea of, which I think for a lot of people growing up in it as a family. So if you haven't grown up in that way, then maybe there being a mum and a dad, it gains this importance because it's something that you didn't have.
And I think it's important for them to, this is where the importance of understanding how these generational cycles take place, how they start to take form, and what damage is doing. What they may not think that just because the children are not in the direct firing line of the abuse, they'll think, well, the children aren't affected, but they are. And this is where the education comes in. They need the awareness of you are dysregulated, so your nervous system is sending a message of danger to their nervous system. What behaviors are you observing in your children? And if these behaviors are, what either end of the scale of the spectrum, either they are extremely aggressive, extremely violent, maybe they're mimicking and replicating behaviors of the other parent, or maybe they are very quiet and withdrawn and
The perfect child as
the
well.
perfect child, and that's where it can go really under the radar. It can go missed. I mean, that was the situation. I mean, that's how the head teacher described the one of the perpetrators who killed Breonna Bray, the
It's a perfect child.
as the as a quiet. She was quiet, but yet behind the scenes, she was looking at very extreme violent, aggressive scenes on the dark web. And, her mom claims that she had no idea. I don't buy that. I don't buy it. There would have been signs, but she's chosen to minimize those and brush those under the carpet. They would have been there. So whether it was she was quiet and just hiding away in her room and she's just left her to it, there'd have been something. There would have been something. But that's where we need to question it. We do need to question.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole, I'm now talking as a mother, take my coach hat off, and I'm just talking as a mother, the whole access to social media, internet, the proliferation of, violent pornography, that it is so widespread and so easily accessible to children, that for me as a mother, it's the thing that scares me the
Yeah,
most.
100%, 100%. If you've got a quiet, people-pleasing child that is going on, social media, games, they are the ones that are easy prey. They are easy prey. So thinking it's a problem, it's not a problem, it's a huge problem. So something with that little girl, Scarlett, something has influenced her. They are very impressionable. And if there's nothing that's disrupting that influence, well, they've only got one thing to go off.
That's the thing. And I mean, the obviously I read a lot of reports around, not fun reading, but I read a lot of reports around, tendencies in suicide and self-harming, and all of these heartbreaking behaviors. I mean, that's the, it's the only word that I can really think of to describe it. And since the, what would I say, since the discovery or of social media and the types of telephones that we have, the numbers and the level or the statistics are, shocking, absolutely shocking, because everything is so much more accessible. And last year I was involved in a family coaching situation, and I was at a meeting at school. Social services had been been involved or were involved with the case at the time. And I was at a meeting. There was me, there was the mother, the head teacher, it was a primary school child, the tutor of the child, an orientador, which is kind of like a counselor type person. They were there, somebody from social services, and the district doctor. And we were in this meeting, and there'd been self-harming, suicidal ideology. We're talking about an 11-year-old. And the meeting ended, and I ended up staying behind and chatting to the district doctor. And he said that he'd been in 9 meetings of that type the day before, all of them primary school.
Doesn't surprise me. Doesn't surprise me. Well, we're just going to break for a short interval and then we shall continue this topic on the risk of suicide in young people. So we'll see you after the break.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome back. Yes, the risk of suicide in young people is becoming a huge problem as well. I mean, I don't know whether I know, obviously, Gemma's in Spain, but there was a recent incident here where a young boy had taken his own life because he was, and here's the, this is the worst part. He thought he'd failed his exams, and it turned out he was given the wrong results. Yeah.
It's
And his parents were given the real results after he'd done what he did. It's horrendous, horrendous. So that's a classic example of what we've just been talking about, that high achieving, people pleasing, perfectionist child,
People are
that's been
susceptible.
modeled, in the family home. Or whether it could even be within school,
I
putting
mean, I think
pressure.
that's the thing. It's So I mean, I'll talk from personal experience. My son's 14, and this is my job. This is what I do. Emotional intelligence is something that we talk a lot about, and obviously, there's a lot of eye rolling that goes on from my teenage son. But it's very much part of the conversation. But about 3 years ago, I started just detecting that something wasn't quite right. He just wasn't as happy as he had been. And so, I talked to a friend of mine that was a child psychologist, and I said, at what point does this become a problem? What do you think? Anyway, a couple of months later, we made the decision that, it would be good for him to talk to somebody. And one of the root problems that he was going through at the time was this idea of, perfectionism. Now, I had never consciously, nor had my husband consciously, ever instilled the idea that he needed to be this perfect child. But somewhere along the way, I fell very ill quite a few years ago. It probably had something to do with that. But somewhere along the way, he picked up this idea that, he needed to be the best at everything, and that his self-worth was kind of linked to that. So, yes, obviously, as parents, we have a lot to do with it. Of course, we do. We are parents. We are
We need
children.
awareness. We as parents need awareness of how we are showing up and how certain things that we do. Prime example, let's give it that. This is a classic example. There's been generations and generations of doctors within a family. Without saying it,
There's the
their
pressure.
child could think, well, I'm expected to do this. This is just what's expected of me. But I don't really want to do medicine.
I mean, I think
And
there is so much
actually,
that goes on behind the scenes that we're not consciously aware of.
And actually, I've got to get really high grades to get into med school. Oh, I'm not meeting my grades. I actually find this topic really, really, really hard. And this is where it can become a problem without them even real without parents even realizing they're doing it. So I think this is where parents need to sit down with their children and say, look, I don't listen, and this is what I say to my daughter, look, I know you don't like learning. You don't. I didn't like it either. In fact, I hated it at school. I was shocking at school. I really was shocking. And ironically, I actually wanted to do something in criminal law. Would you believe it? But I knew I wasn't academic enough to be able to do that. And that's what I always say to her is that, look, you don't. All I want from you is, and this is for your benefit. It's not so much for me and what I expect of you. But you just need to be able to read to a level where you can function through life, and you need to be able to do basic maths to a point where you can function through life. That's it. Anything else, you do what you find interesting, what inspires you. That's what I want for you. But you can't do these things that inspire you without being able to read.
And this is one of, so I was a teacher for a very long time before I turned to coaching. And it was always one of my frustrations how, and even more so here in Spain, it's very rigid, it's very old-fashioned. There's a lot of rote learning going on. It's not let's play and explore with something, which I think in the UK there's a lot more tendency towards that. However, the systems that are in place aren't there to inspire, the ones that maybe learn in a slightly different way. Or, going back to what we were talking about, the quiet children or the very aggressive ones, it can be very easy within a classroom or within a school for those children not to be forgotten about, but, and I say this knowing that teachers absolutely try their best and are juggling a million and one different things. I'm not saying that the blame is on the teachers at all, but that the system in itself doesn't allow for enough attention or time to be able to put in the fo you know, to put the focus on those children, whether it be they learn in a different way, whether it be they're very quiet and so they don't, they don't make any, they're not causing any trouble, and so they get forgotten about.
Exactly.
All the ones that are absolute troublemakers, and all they want is for them to just be quiet, go sit in a corner. And
Yeah.
it's kind of the people that are on either end of the scale
Yeah.
quite often end up being, left out because it's easier to deal with the people just in the middle.
That's it. That's it exactly. Yeah. And it is a scale. It is a scale that, if you've got tr if you have if there's, there is childhood trauma, and again, this is where the complexity comes in, is that many people don't understand childhood trauma. They think that it is growing up in a war zone, and as we've just highlighted, given a couple of examples there, that's not necessarily always the case, because
It can be more nuanced.
it's how the child feels. It's the emotion that's the problem, not the event. It's the
Exactly.
emotion that they feel and what story they're creating in their own mind attached to the situation that's making them feel bad. Like in your son's case, he was attaching his worth and his value to how successful he and how achieving he was, which some things happened for him to create that. And
Absolutely, and
it's one picking,
absolutely.
well, how do you feel for a start to make you think that this is the scenario and the expectation over you?
And that's the word, it's
And
the expectation that they perceive. Not that the expectation that's actually there,
no.
but that for some reason they are perceiving that whether it be to, I mean, in my case, I was very sick. And I think that on a subconscious level, there was a part of him that thought that he needed to be the best possible version so that things were easier for me. But this was all going on when he was six, seven, eight. It's not that he was aware of these things, but it's the things like, I mean, it's a great word that you use, expectation and perception, the perception. And on a subconscious level, like I said before, there's so many different layers. And I think in that respect, we need to be careful with our words. I don't think I would, say blame the parents because I think a lot of the time, like this is my job. I still wasn't aware of the things that was going on. And I know and I'm aware. And if I saw it in somebody else, then obviously I would probably spot it sooner. But what I did notice that there was, it was almost like that instinctive feeling. There was just something that wasn't quite right. And I think as parents, particularly mothers, that we do have this very, very strong instinct. It's just whether or not we allow ourselves to listen to it. Sometimes there's so much noise going on in the outside world that we, our attention is distracted and we're not listening to that.
We can have a tendency to rationalize things. And by rationalizing, we can miss some things that need addressing. I mean, it can literally, and this is an example that I use all the time, because it's unfortunately is the reality for many, many, many families. Mum and dad are just busy with life. We are living in a cost of living crisis. The demands are far higher in this day and age on parents, that they have to, both work. They have to, in some cases, work a lot of hours. Maybe they're afraid
Juggle a
of losing the
million
job.
different things all at the same time.
Maybe they're afraid of losing the job, and maybe they've got people pleasing tendencies. Well, I must be this overgiver in work, because if I don't, I won't see my value, and then I might lose my job. And then how do I keep food on the table? How do I keep a roof over everybody's head? And it's all of those things that can lead to the child thinking, well, I'm not important, I'm not loved, I'm completely invisible. As an adult, they can look back and they can rationalize and observe the situation for what it was, and see that, well, actually, no, I wasn't neglected, I wasn't unloved. They did love me. They spent as
It doesn't
time
mean
with me as they possibly could. But that child didn't see that at the time. It was innocent.
exactly, and that whilst we can as adults rationalize these things, it doesn't mean that those feelings go away. In fact,
Exactly.
I was in a session with somebody the other day, and we were talking about certain things that had happened to them in, in their life. This person's a young adult. And they were saying, I have a great life. If I look at the list, I've got everything ticked, everything's wonderful. I just don't understand why I still feel like this when on the surface, everything seems perfect. And when I look back at those things that happened, I know that nobody meant to harm me in any way. And so the session, during the session, what we ended up really going into was the difference between what we can rationalize in our mind and what we feel in our heart and deep down. And that's the problem, that, like you say, that child that felt that way, those things then carry on into the adult, unless we do the really challenging and difficult work of going to therapy, going through those things, looking at old wounds, and finding a way to, release them in some way.
Yeah, it goes back to that importance of the emotional connection. It's the core basic needs that a child need requires, and it can be masked an awful lot. It can be masked an awful lot, particularly when you have and you find you'll find that you find this a lot mainly in private schools, because on the surface it looks like they've got the picture perfect life, the big house, they're going to private school, they've got the flash cars, all the luxury holidays.
Yeah, the material
It on
things
the
on the
surface,
outside.
yeah, it appears as though everything's picture perfect. There isn't anything coming to light, particularly of violence or aggression in the home. And this is where it can go amiss. But it can be, you're more inclined to get that emotional disconnect between parent and child in that situation, unfortunately. So we're just going to break for a short interval, and we shall see you after the break.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
So, welcome back. So, to wrap up, we everybody who anybody who listens to my shows regularly, I always like to let you walk away from every episode with something that you can hold on to with for hope, and think that, yeah, okay, there's a way forward here. So, as a parent who is seeing, let's say you've got a parent who is in the same position as what you were when you're observing something's not quite right with my child. What would you say to them?
I think for me, the most important thing is always communication. So, creating a space and creating an environment where the child feels comfortable enough to say, "Hey, this is going on." And maybe they don't have the exact words. Maybe they don't, they're not going to use the same vocabulary as we would. But with that internal instinct that we've got, and then certain things that they're saying, that's, what we want is we want to have safe relationships where people, both the parent and the child, feel like they can tell each other things. And if that's not something that's normal, because it's not in every household, if it's not something that we grew up knowing how to do or being encouraged to do, then it's not necessarily easy for us to, just naturally do that. So there's some subtle ways to start opening and creating that, that more fluid type of communication at home. And a really good way to do that is at the end of the day, ask your child. And it, I mean, like I said, my son's 14 and I still do it. And yes, he like, he sighs and he's like, "Ugh, you're so annoying." But he does it because he's used to it. I'll ask him, "What has been your favorite thing this day? Like today, what was your favorite thing out of or and sometimes like nothing. It was the worst day. I'm like, "Okay, well, out of everything in this absolutely awful day, what is the one thing that wasn't as awful?" And that's a way to get them used to sharing things with you. And once they're used to sharing the good things, then after a little while, we can start to introduce, okay, and what was one thing that you really struggled with today? Or what was one thing that really annoyed you? Or what was one thing that really angered you? And that way we can start introducing, the vocabulary of emotions. And once they connect with that, that's when we can then help to give them the tools to regulate those emotions in a safe way, rather than, in a way that's going to be harmful to themselves and potentially to other people. But I think that the first step is always, this idea of creating an open and an honest communication.
And I think it's really important for parents to, if you, even if you haven't, you think, well, I'm not pressurizing them to do X, Y, and Z and become, following my footsteps, you need to communicate that. Don't
Exactly.
assume that they
They know.
automatically know, because if there is a situation like that and you can see that they are a very high achiever and maybe they beat themselves up if they don't, achieve the results that they would like to have got, or what they're expecting of themselves or what they think other people are expecting of them, and that's the important part. It may be what they think other people are expecting of them, whether that be they what they think you're expecting of them, or whether what they think school is expecting of them. If you see them feel it looking under pressure, you need to communicate, look, you whatever results you get, I'm happy with. I know you will have done your best, and that's all anybody can ever ask of you.
And I think we underestimate the power of language. Like words create reality. And the things that we say to ourselves create the reality, the things that we say to other people. And I think one other thing that I'd add to that is, this idea of blame can be a very powerful force in stopping us from moving forward. If you're seeing something in your child that you're feeling just, it's not quite right, or maybe there's aggressive behavior, or maybe there's something that the child's struggling with and they're unhappy. I think we have to be careful. Yes, we have responsibility. We are involved in all of this, and we are responsible for the way that our children behave and the rules that they learn and the way that they're brought up. But like I said before, there are so many different layers, and just because something is going amiss or maybe they're struggling with something, that doesn't necessarily mean it's our fault. And I think this idea of blame can hold people back from reaching out for help because they feel like they'll be judged. They feel like that, I'm the worst parent in the world because my son or my daughter needs to talk to somebody or needs some extra help. Actually, it's the opposite. If you are seeing something and you are reaching out to somebody for help or looking on the internet or whatever it is, if you realize that maybe this is something that you can't necessarily do alone, taking that step means you are an amazing parent, not a bad parent.
I mean, it is all about your awareness as well. Your awareness is absolutely crucial. Denial doesn't, it isn't going to help anybody. We have to have awareness as parents to be able to help and support them through whatever difficulties they have.
Absolutely.
And if it means reflecting on ourselves and how we're showing up, because we can be doing that unconsciously. I mean, I don't know about you, Gemma, but I can be guilty of it, and I have awareness, but because I do have awareness, I clock it quickly and I address it. And I'll sit down with her and I'll say, I'm really sorry. I know I've been busy doing X, Y, and Z. But I just have to, I just have to get this done, darling, don't you? And, but we will do X, Y, and Z.
And that's what I
It
mean
is
about
communicate.
communicating. So of course we're not perfect all. We're not meant to be perfect all of the time. But maybe one of the strengths that you and I have is that we have tools that when we do go off the path, which of course we do, we recognize it maybe a little bit sooner and then know what we need to do. But look at how the first thing that you do with your daughter when you realize that maybe, your attention has been somewhere else or something's not working quite, your first instinct is to go back and sit down and talk it through with her. And that's the power of communication.
Because we need to avoid them. We need to disrupt any narrative that they're creating, sitting there, creating in their own mind based off how they feel about your busyness.
Yeah, and help them create a new one.
Exactly. Well, thank you, Gemma. It's been absolutely wonderful having you on.
Thank you for having me. I mean, I think we could go on for hours
We
and hours
could.
and hours. We don't really have a problem chit-chatting, do
But we shall get Gemma on again for another episode. Maybe next time we can talk about it more about schools and what they can do to improve situations. Because we focus a lot on parents, haven't we, on this one? I think on the next episode, maybe talk about schools.
And creating awareness within society. I think, we
Yeah.
are tribal people at our core. And like they say, it takes a village to raise a child. And that's why it is about the parents, but it's also about the wider support
Yeah,
system.
it is. It is. Well, thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls, and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specializing in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.